What's up, everyone? It's Andrea. Today, we thought this episode was a bunch of other episodes. We devise a bum 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 scale. And we ask the question, how messed up is it that everyone knew about Riker's son and didn't tell him? Stay tuned.
Welcome to the TNG podcast, the number one place in the Alpha Quadrant to geek out about all things Star Trek, The Next Generation. I am your recovering co-host, Charisse.
I'm your co-host, Andrea. Before we get into this episode, Charisse, are you doing okay?
I am pretty sick. Haven't been able to talk for a couple days, but I really, really needed to talk about this episode. So we're going to record it anyways. Okay, so apologies for having a little bit of a rough voice today.
First of all, not being able to talk for days sounds like either a dream scenario for me or an absolute nightmare scenario. And it probably would be a dream for like a minute. And then I'd be like, must talk, must say something.
Yeah. So, for me, since I'm such an introvert, it kind of had no impact on my day, except for I'm really glad I didn't have any Zoom meetings. So that was the only thing that was kind of special.
I'll tell you what, being sick in the age of texting is so much easier. Because I don't know if you remember, like, we actually had to call in sick when we were, you know, like my first job. And sometimes you'd actually be too sick to pick up the phone and call. So it's actually really nice to text and be like, hey, I'm really sick.
Yes.
But yikes. Yep. I'm really sorry that you're sick. But by the way, I feel like our listeners should like level 1000 appreciate what you're doing right now, because you're putting a vocal cord strain on yourself just to put this episode together. So we have it out on time. So
appreciate me. Appreciate me.
You know what? I'm gonna cut that and paste it throughout our episode. So it's just gonna be you saying appreciate me, appreciate me.
You know what? That actually fits perfectly with this episode. And I'm excited to talk about today's episode because I think it's really sweet.
It is a really good episode. Today we're breaking down season 4, episode 8, Future Imperfect, written by J. Larry Carroll and David Bennett Caron, and directed by Les Landau. Commander Riker's birthday celebration is interrupted as he, Geordi, and Worf are sent down to a huge cavern on Alpha Onias 3 to investigate some unusual readings. After their arrival, the cavern suddenly fills with toxic gas and the three officers fall unconscious. Riker awakens in sickbay to find that 16 years has passed. Exactly. He's now new captain of the Enterprise. He cannot remember any event after the Alpha Onias 3 mission, which Dr. Crusher explains is a side effect of a viral infection he contracted on the planet, and his memories of the intervening events may or may not return. Again, another bump. Like, this is a two bump, bump, bump synopsis. Maybe we need to have a rating scale of how many bump, bump, bums it is. Like, Captain Picard needs a vacation. Zero bump, bump, bump.
I know. I was going to say
this one
is making up for that.
This is a double bump, bump, bump kind of scenario. Oh my God. Okay. So do you have any initial thoughts on this episode, Charisse?
Yes. So we were just talking offline about what we thought this episode was about based on the little tiny cover image that Netflix provides. So looking at that image, I was like, I got nothing. And then I read
the little thumbnail. Yeah.
The thumbnail didn't mean anything. And then I read the description and I was like, Riker's birthday, something happens. I was like, Riker even had a birthday? I was like,
that's what I thought. The only birthday I think of is Worf's birthday that has the time jump thing.
Yes.
Yeah, which like Future Imperfect as a title sounds
like
about
that.
Right.
It sounds like that. Yeah. And that episode is great. I love that episode.
Fucking amazing episode.
Oh, so good. So that's what I was thinking. I was like, Riker's birthday, when did that ever happen? So I was like, yeah, I got nothing. So I was like, I wonder how long it's going to take before I remember what this episode's about, because a lot of episodes in season 3 I was like, wait, what's this one? Oh my gosh, you know. And so it wasn't until that cavern moment when they got transported where it just hit me and I was like, oh my gosh, I remember this one. It's the one with the little boy and oh, this is so great.
Yeah, yes.
And I was really excited because I haven't seen it in a while, but I know I liked it, so that's always a good sign. What about you?
I thought that this episode was the one where Riker is like taken prisoner and he's got that like cut
also,
on his head.
Oh no, not by the Romulans, by some alien.
I think it's
something.
Yeah. It's some aliens.
Yeah.
And he is like trying to break out of this prison and then it turns out it's not real. So
and
like,
it's not even a prison. It's like an insane asylum.
Yes, on an alien planet. Yes. And like, it's, and like the reality keeps shifting, which that episode really freaks me the F out because, ugh, just our reality.
It's a terrifying scenario.
It is a terrifying scenario. Yeah. And it's, I feel like we're living in the Matrix episode. As it is. So I don't need any reality shifts to be happening over here. Okay. So I thought that this one might be that one.
Yeah.
But I remember the thumbnail for that episode was like a freeze frame of Riker looking particularly like insane.
Yes.
So I was like, this isn't right. And then birthday party, is this the Worf one? Like, I really had no idea which one this was going into it. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of nice to, as like a TNG super fan, kind of have like a fresh experience with an episode. Mm-hmm. And then the ending made me super sad. But we'll get into that when we get there. So let's start off with Riker's birthday party.
So first of all, this was the first birthday party, right? That we've seen.
Yes, it was.
I was like, I don't think we've had a birthday party yet. So birthday parties on TNG are kind of like the poker games. They're things that kind of come
slice
up.
Slice of life.
Slice of life that come up only a handful of times, but like they're very memorable, except for this one. This was not memorable, which makes sense because it all happened before.
All three of the birthday parties are super memorable, but two of them are really memorable and one is not. So 33% of our birthday scenarios are not. I actually thought, I was like, is this also the weird one where like, they're having birthday cake, but it's Deanna Troi's body.
Exactly.
And she doesn't watch
that
it.
That was like, a Data episode.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, I remember that one too. I'm telling you. So they are
really memorable.
Except for this one, which is why we kept relating it to all the other cake episodes.
Cake,
and it wasn't any of
or
those.
Or birthdays or Future Imperfect or sliding doors type of reality situation.
Yeah, and it wasn't any of that. None of those. But yeah, the birthday party was like, okay, this is, I think, their first birthday party. And did you notice that the cake was galaxy themed?
Oh my God. I was like, a space cake? Come on.
Did you see around the cake? There was like whipped cream making clouds.
Yes. I saw that. And I was like, the food decorating the prop department or whichever department it is that takes care of this was like, I know, space. And I was like, fuck you in particular. Can you give him like just a white sheet cake, or like, I guess that would look too like,
no, it has to be something spacey. Space makes sense. Otherwise they'd have to come up with a futuristic ideation of cake. And I think it's easier just to make sheet cake with some stars on it. It's a lot easier than, I mean, because I'm just sitting here thinking now, like, how dope would it be to have a cake shaped like Vulcan, or, you know, like having like volcanoes on it or some crazy thing? That'd be awesome. And it's like 10 seconds of the episode where they could be spending that budget on some cool monster makeup. So,
yeah.
Okay.
I mean, for the practical effects, I understand. But God damn it, I am so sick of seeing space. You know what I'm going to do after we talk about this episode? I'm going to go take some walk on some grass or something. Okay. I'm going to go see a hill somewhere. Damn it.
Something that's not a void. Fair. That's fair.
I'm not going to look at any fucking pictures of the Borg or nebulas. All right. So, okay. So Picard and Data are on the bridge and they're getting ready to go join the party. They're kind of wrapping up some stuff and they're floating above. They're, you know, orbiting above Alpha Onias 3 and taking some readings for who cares. And they find some really strange readings are reported in this like subterranean structure. So since Riker's the first officer, he always leads the away team. So he needs to leave the birthday party and go down to this to this cave. And it's very close. They're in the neutral zone or very near the neutral zone. And so they suspect some Romulan activity is going on. So they beam down, you know, Riker, Worf, and Geordi beam down. And it's just a big old cave, but there are some strange readings. And all of a sudden, we have this, like, emission of, like, strange gases. Mm-hmm. And Picard is like, uh-oh, get them back. Get them back now. And Worf, Geordi, and Riker all collapse because it's, like, some release of, like, methane gas, mm-hmm. and it's going to, like, knock them unconscious. Now,
which makes me think, I think they need more tools in their tool belt when they go on away missions. Gas masks should be a thing. I mean, they've got like a tricorder and a phaser and that's it.
Yeah.
Maybe they need a little more.
You can read what gases are poisoning you, but you can't do anything about it. It's like learning who the killer is moments before you're killed by that person. Great. Like knowledge does nothing for me. I can't be helped at all. Here I go.
Basically playing Among Us. That's what they do every time they go on an away mission.
You're right. The away team is exactly like Among Us, where you can see what's killing you 1 second before it kills you. And then that's it. So yeah, maybe they need more equipment, like maybe pockets or like throw them a fanny pack.
I don't know. Something. Just some thoughts. Just some thoughts
for
the future.
Anything. Yeah. So they all get knocked out. And this is all before credits roll. Riker is awoken in sick bay. And I love future stuff.
My word. I love
the little changes and differences.
Yes.
Yes.
This episode specifically.
The future stuff is awesome.
We've also seen the other thing I love about this episode. I mean, there were little changes that I didn't quite notice because you're more of the expert on set deck stuff than I am. But what I did notice, you're welcome, was the makeup jobs, because I'm so obsessed with that. And the olding makeup in this episode was to die for.
Yes. No, I really couldn't tell where prosthetics were coming into play. I literally couldn't tell. You know, everybody's hair had like a touch more gray and all that. Like, that's easy enough. But to do like Riker and have him like with slight, you know, like 15 years more wrinkles, it's not, it's not a huge amount, but it's just consistent with like aging 16 years. So Troy's
makeup, I mean, she looked older and still beautiful. Picard looked amazing. Beverly looked at the gray, the touches of gray were so just
the
perfect.
Touches around the temple. Perfect. Yeah. It wasn't a big streak like Rogue on the original like X-Men movie from like 2000. That was like a huge streak. This was just touches around the temple. So here's a couple things that were different. First off, Beverly's hair was totally different. She has kind of this like lazy bun on top of her.
That's what they ended up doing with Janeway's hair in Voyager for the first season. They did that crazy sloppy, weird.
Yeah, kind of
bun
a sloppy bun a where like your hair is kind of sticking out. Yeah, yeah. You know what? It actually looks very, and this is a weird throwback in history. This looks very like 1910s. Like in the 1910s, women had their hair like this. It was a little bit more combed out and stuff, but they had this kind of, their hair sort of stuck out and then went back into like a high bun. So, and I have just finished watching season one of Mr. Selfridge, because, you know, it's the holidays when we're recording. So I'm off school and I've just been binging stuff. And that was the hair. So when I saw Beverly with that, I was like, oh my God, that's just like Mr. Selfridge, which starts off in 1910. So I was like, oh, interesting. So her hair is different. I love that sickbay is a little bit different. And did we notice we never really got a clear shot of Riker until he sat up and there were mirrors above him in sickbay as like an operating theater. And then we saw him in the reflection. She calls him Captain Riker and he sits up and we see gray hair and he's older. And that's like the biggest bump, bump, bump. And then it cuts to credits. And it's like, holy shit. What has just happened? He's passed out. And now it's years later. We don't know how long, but we know he's the captain. Oh my God.
So which makes you immediately think, what happened to Picard? He must have died, because it's the only way you're possibly going to get Riker in that captain's seat, because he's passed up three ships at this point.
Yeah. Which all have blown up. So, you know, works out fine for him, but yeah, exactly. It's like, what has happened to Picard? Like, why are you captain? So we come back from credits and Beverly starts to fill him in. He remembers the away mission on Alpha Onias 3, but Beverly tells him that that happened 16 years ago. So he contracted an Altarian virus, which was in the air. Luckily, Worf and Geordi were not affected, but it's famous for causing memory loss. And when you have an episode of memory loss, it takes you right back to the moment of infection, which is a very cool premise.
That is the most interesting. And we've had some really interesting viruses on this show so far.
We've had practically nothing but viruses on the show.
That is true. And this one, though, I think is so fascinating. This might be my favorite so far as how it actually functions. A virus that takes you back to the moment of infection. Imagine chickenpox is a retrovirus like this Altarian virus.
Yes, yes.
And it infects you usually when you're a kid, but then it reactivates when you get older and your immune system is not as great.
I've had the pleasure of shingles. And let me tell you, I thought I might die. It was so bad.
By pleasure, she means excruciating pain.
Yes, it was excruciating pain.
And so the idea that if you got chickenpox as like a 5-year-old and then it comes back when you're, let's say, 60, but then it erases your memory to the age of 5, that would be nuts. That would be totally nuts. This is a fascinating, as a microbiologist, this is a fascinating idea for a virus. So I was totally like, what?
Yes. And, from the writing perspective, really glad that's not real. Cause I got chickenpox when I was 3 and I got shingles when I was like 35 and it was, I wouldn't want to go back to being 3 and not knowing what the F is going on.
I wouldn't want to go back to being 3 at all for any reason.
No, not ever. Not for any amount of money. So this is, from the writer's perspective, a fabulous way to explain why they can jump forward in the future. And he doesn't remember anything, which really he's the viewer. He's us. We don't know what's been going on. So now we have the pleasure of getting filled in on like all these changes as well. And these like big reveals, which is so fun, super fun as a viewer. You're like on this fun ride. So he's been captain of the Enterprise for 9 years. And Beverly said, you know, we want to do like exposure therapy, which suddenly she's a freaking therapist. We want to do exposure therapy to try to jog your memory because your memory may return if you're exposed to things that are familiar to you. And so he's like, let's get this started. And she's like, wait a minute. I said your memory may return. It may not. You may never remember like the last 16 years.
Which is awful.
Which is like, wait, what? Because a lot can happen in 16 years. A lot can happen in 1 year.
Imagine
you were infected with the Altarian virus a week before the pandemic hit, and you just woke up now, and you're like, explain to me what the fuck has gone on in the planet? Why are we all hoarding toilet paper? You know, why is nobody touching each other?
Why is everybody wearing masks? Yeah. This virus, the idea that it could like erase everything and you may not get it back is even more terrifying because if it was temporary amnesia, then you're like, okay, it'll start to kind of come back.
Yes.
But with this kind of like, will it, won't it? You're like, ooh,
I don't know. Now I don't know. Exactly. So Beverly's like, you know, let's go to your quarters because that's where you have the most personal items and try, you know, could start to jog your memory. And he's like, no, my life is on the bridge. I want to go to the bridge. So Riker goes to the bridge. Now he tells the turbo lift to go to the main bridge and it's like, beep, beep, boop, 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 or whatever. And it's like, I'm sorry, I don't know that command. And so he goes, main bridge. And then the turbo lift is like, oh, okay. And it starts going. And Beverly says that the attenuator is down and Jordy's been running a level one diagnostic on it all morning.
And so yeah. And the computer's just slow. It's been slow. The computer's
just being a little slow. Yeah. Which totally is fine.
It tracks. And since the computer runs absolutely every single thing about the ship, you're like, okay, well, everything's going to be slow.
Yeah. It makes sense that it's going to be a little slow. Sometimes it's going to be a little glitchy, a little laggy. Now, if it was an Apple product, it would stop working altogether after 5 years. So
you'd have to buy a whole new enterprise.
Yeah. You'd have to just buy a whole new one. Yeah. Send back your old one for some credit and then get the new one, which will cost you 12 trillion, bars of platinum.
Yeah.
So we're so nerdy. All right. So he shows up to the bridge. First off, he talks to Jordy and Jordy turns around and he can see it's LeVar Burton with no visor on, which must have been such a thrill for LeVar Burton to not have these things physically screwed onto his temples, which is what he had. Like they put with spirit gum, glued these little metal plates to his temple and then literally screwed the visor onto the metal plates.
Wow.
Which led to like a 7 year long migraine for poor LeVar. So what a stunt.
Also, you mentioned back in season one that LeVar couldn't actually see through his visor at all.
Yeah, I mean, he was totally blind.
At some point they upgraded that design from the inside so he could see, but maybe they did it. I mean, it depends on how much he complained.
You know what? By season four, if you look carefully as he moves around, you can kind of see his eyes through the teeth of the banana clip a little bit.
Uh-huh.
But it just made him like, first of all, he had no peripheral vision whatsoever.
Right.
So he was like bumping into cameras, tripping over cords and stuff all day long, which must have been just infuriating. I hope they paid him enough for that role because that'd have been like, what the hell? But it's so lovely to see him like with his normal real life eyes.
It's actually pretty shocking to me.
I was expecting
him to have the white eyes because that's usually what he looks like in the future when he's not wearing his visor. His eyes are completely they're completely white.
Yeah.
And so to see just like regular eyes, I was like, who is this person?
You know what? Exactly. Isn't that funny that like we look at people, every other cast member of TNG has their regular vision, their regular eyes. Mm-hmm. And when we see Jordy with regular eyes, we're like, who is this? You know, it just feels totally different.
And so that was weird. And also, okay, so then he has first of all, Riker's like, wait, Jordy, your eyes, what's going on? And then Jordy's like, oh, right, the memory loss thing. And he says, well, you know, I got my eyes replaced whenever, like years ago or something. Mm-hmm. And I just thought, flag on the play, he wouldn't do that. And the reason he wouldn't do that is because he had this opportunity in season two with Pulaski.
Yeah.
He said that very thing, I can get your eyes replaced, which back then when the show was being recorded, eye replacements, I don't know how common those were. That's definitely a thing today.
Not common at all. And you know what?
Yeah.
Honestly, even like from what I understand, and I don't understand much, from what I understand, it's you're basically getting kind of like a 3D printed eye. And you may be able to see some out of it, but not as well as like the, you know, like you're a normal eye, but even still the idea of that is so fascinating. It really, really is. It really is.
Yeah.
And as I said, I really don't know much, but I don't do a lot of reading on like prosthetic eyes, but still, what a cool prospect.
Yeah. So I was just like, Jordy wouldn't, he wouldn't replace the vision that he has is better than eyes. We've had this conversation many times.
Yeah.
So I was like, I don't think
he's got thermal signatures and shit.
For real. Unless the synthetic eyes or his new eyes have some special abilities more than just a regular person's eyes.
Yeah. He's got a button on the side of his head where he pushes the button and then it can see an IR.
Something or like, I don't know. It's either got to be as good or better than his vision with his visor was. Otherwise, yeah, there'd be no reason for him to get that surgery. Yeah. And also the other reason why he didn't get it when Pulaski offered it was because that it could cause pain like forever. So I'm sure at this point, 16 years later, that part has been solved.
Yeah.
But anyways, in either case, it was really cool / weird to see Jordy
with eyes.
With eyes. Yep.
Yeah. 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 Okay. So there's a couple of other things too. Worf has a hell of a scar on his face. There's a Ferengi ensign. Did you notice the clown badge?
That was so great.
So cool.
Ferengi ensign. Yes. I was like, what? There's a Ferengi in Starfleet?
Yeah. There had to have been one at least. So there's also a Klingon woman like walking down the hallways earlier in the episode. The clown badges are different. They have bars instead of the oval. And the number of bars indicates rank. So there's no more pips on the collar.
Oh.
So Worf has 2 gold bars and 1 silver bar. Data has 3 gold bars because he's now first officer, and Riker has 4 gold bars. And I was looking really carefully on them because you know how much I love like props and set stuff.
Yeah.
And world building type things. So for example, Worf has the 2 gold bars and the 1 silver. The 4th bar is there, but it's just black. It's a black bar. So it actually looks pretty invisible. It only was until I froze and like zoomed in that I was like, oh, there is that other bar there, which made it easy, you know, for prop department to like just pop out a bunch of these and just paint them different, you know, colors or whatever.
Smart.
But yeah, there's no more pips on the collar, which I thought was kind of cool. Like the comm badge now is an insignia, communicator, and rank, like denoter.
That is freaking efficient. And I
love
that.
Because in TOS, it was just an insignia. It didn't even have like communication purpose.
Right.
You know, they had the little like,
oh, that's so true.
It was just like a badge, like an embroidered little like logo that was
It's almost like a name tag.
It was like a name tag in TOS, which I think is such a great step up into TNG, where not only is it your insignia, but now it's your communicator as well, which I thought, what a great way to combine multiple pieces of technology like into one. So that was rad. So as all this is happening, a Romulan warbird decloaks in front of them. Riker's like, red alert, shields up. And Dude's like, no, we've actually been expecting the Decius. Like,
which had big question marks in my head.
Yeah. I was like,
run, fight. And then Data's like, sir, this is actually a scheduled appointment. We want them to decloak. And it was like, and Riker has this look on his face where he's like, things must have changed.
Yes. By the way, how strange is it to see Data in a red command uniform? I'll never get used to that.
It's weird.
I never will.
It's weird.
Seeing him in red, it's like seeing Jordy without the visor. I was like, this is so hard to like kind of take in and understand. Now the warbird hails the Enterprise, and on screen, question answered, Admiral Picard with a pretty terrible goatee on. I hate him with a goatee. And he's got a little extensions in the back to make the back of his hair longer. And Deanna is at his side, and she looks older and beautiful. She reminds me a lot of like Catherine Zeta-Jones, who's just an absolute stunning woman in like Mask of Zorro that came out like 20 something years ago and is in her 50s now. And it's just as beautiful.
It's just
a like more mature and still stunning woman. And Picard and Deanna beam over, and it's nice.
And I was like, phew, I thought for sure Picard had died.
Yeah.
Like, that's the only way Riker's finally going to take a captain's seat. But it's like, oh no, Picard was just promoted and it left an opening.
I'm surprised that Riker hadn't asked, like, what happened to the captain? Why am I the captain? So it's not, first of all, we see Picard, we see Deanna beam over. It's nice to see her in a regulation uniform, personally. It just looks more official and efficient.
Yeah.
So it turns out there are some Romulan negotiations that have been going on for a long time. They're almost over. And Will Riker has been sort of the key player in this negotiation, and he needs to finish it up and have everybody sign the treaty. And as they kind of fill this in, you know, Riker's like, look, I just had this like whole episode. I don't even remember anything past Alpha Onis 3. Keep in mind,
he literally just woke up from a coma. That's like, what Beverly told him.
2 hours ago or less.
Yeah, and that he's really been in for like 2 weeks. So yes, he just woke up from a coma.
Yeah.
He's got amnesia. He doesn't remember the last 16 years. And you want him to close a negotiation that's been going on for 4 years.
Yeah.
And he's just like, look, I'm not fit to resume command of anything, not even of the ship. I need
Picard
to go lay down.
Is like, even with all that, you're still the best man for the job. False. I'm going to say false on that.
I'm going to agree with you.
Yeah.
How you're could he possibly still sake? Be you the best man for the up. Job?
And if everybody has agreed on all the terms and all we need to do is have like
sign the a wormhole
viewing reception in 10 forward and everybody sign this treaty, then like, you know what? Picard, wrap it up. Like, this is the time for like pomp and circumstance. Like, we've done it. We've reached this agreement. Everybody sign. Here's a glass of champagne. Thanks for coming. Goodbye.
Some Aldebaran wine.
Listen, let's bring it out. Let's bring it out. Right. Yes. Okay. So Deanna offers to walk Riker to his quarters. And this is a giant WTF. They find a boy playing the trombone badly because at the beginning, Riker at his birthday party was playing the trombone pretty badly. Everybody knew that Will had a 16-year gap in his memory, and no one thought to mention he has a son who he's named Jean-Luc. Like, nobody thought to mention this. I was like,
yeah.
What?
This seems kind of like the most important piece of information.
Yeah.
Which
who
to that.
Who fucking cares what happened to Picard? You have a child. You have a son who's like 10 or 12 or
something.
And
in theory, a wife. Which we find out yes. later she's passed away, but in theory, he has a wife and child, and no one's mentioned a thing, which is like, what the heck? And then Troy mentions later on, like, we thought that shocking you this way would help jog your memory. Does that ever work?
No.
I don't think amnesia is like the hiccups. I don't think you need to
and
shock
I was
it into
gonna
them.
Say, I was just going to say, you can't even surprise the hiccups away. You can't surprise a kid into memory. I'm sorry, you can't. So I'm glad that he actually asks the same question, like,
no one thought to mention this to me.
We're fucking talking about trade negotiations and nobody's telling me that I have a son.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And it turns out married to the new ship's counselor who took over after Troy decided to leave because
he certainly got a type.
He does have a type. Yeah. You know, some people are really into like redheads. Riker's really into ship's counselors. That's like the most niche relationship type I've ever seen in my life. But, we back up a little bit and we learn that, you know, Picard was promoted to admiral and he gave Deanna this offer to go to Starfleet Command. And it's this big jump in responsibility and a big pay leap. And her medical benefits are like way better than the HMO she was getting on the ship. Mm-hmm. So all that stuff. So she's like, it's too good of an opportunity. I couldn't pass it up, which you go, girl.
Mm-hmm.
And so this new ship's counselor named Min took over and she and Riker got married and they have this kid and she died 2 years ago in some sort of shuttle accident or something.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And it's just, it's like, oh my God, so much has happened. It just blows my mind.
So there is one thing that kind of bothers me about this whole situation that we see again with Jean-Luc here. And that's the fact that nobody seems particularly surprised or inquisitive about the fact that Riker just woke up from a 2-week coma. Like, granted, they say like, oh, you know, everybody was prepared for it and we tried to prepare Jean-Luc for it and, you know, all these different things. I'm just like, but I mean, he just woke up. He just woke up like an hour ago. I feel like people should be like, oh, Captain, you're awake. Oh my gosh, Dad, you're back. Like some kind of surprise or excitement.
Yeah,
or
everybody's
something.
Like, oh, hey.
I mean, not even, it's business as usual. Riker walks into the bridge and Geordi's like, well, here's what's going on with the coolant and the warp core and whatever.
You know what? Like, you're right about that. And when they walk in and see Jean-Luc, little Jean-Luc, he's just practicing the trombone, like, burr, 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 like just doing his scales. Mm-hmm. Like,
nailed it.
I don't really realize I talk like this until somebody points it out. And then I'm like, oh God, what must I sound like? Jeez.
So great for this podcast. Exactly. So I felt like people should have been surprised, but maybe the staff was already told, like, by the way, the captain's awake, who knows what. But again, when Jean-Luc is sitting there playing and Riker walks in, the first thing Jean-Luc does is he says, hey, Dad, can you help me with my homework?
Yeah.
What? He doesn't say,
you've been
oh
in
my
a
gosh,
coma for 2 weeks. Right. Yeah. How were
running
you not like at his bedside?
Something?
Yeah. Like when somebody's in a coma, you're usually at their bedside. for a few weeks before they're like, okay, this is going to be a long-term thing. You might have to just check in with them every day. But like, it's been 2 weeks. It hasn't been 2 years, you know? So like, why wasn't he at sick bay? Like, yeah. All of this is just like, huh? It's just a big question.
Yeah. That's the only, probably my only criticism about this episode is that I wanted somebody to be surprised, relieved, excited, have some emotional response to the fact that someone who supposedly has been in a coma for 2 weeks just woke up an hour ago.
Yes.
Oh, and by the way, has lost 16 years of his life.
Yes.
Like, I want some kind of emotional response to that from other people besides Riker.
Yeah. And Jean-Luc Picard is like, oh yeah, Altarian virus. It's a bitch. Like, that's,
yep.
So you ready to do these negotiations? It's just, and like,
you're
huh?
still the best man for the job.
But I don't remember any of it. Doesn't matter who. Yeah. So at this point, we do have the Romulans getting ready to come aboard to finish up this trade negotiation. And it's Tomalak. It's the same baddie from Nelvana 3, which was season 3, episode 10, The Defector. Remember, they were like, tell me where station 23 is. And that's like the big secret base or whatever. And it turns out it was nothing at all. And Tomalak was our bad guy. And remember, he said, I am going to like destroy the Enterprise and bring it back to Romulus and display its broken hull as a trophy, which is very savage and very on point for like historical conquerors to do things like that.
Yeah. I was like, this dude again.
Yeah.
Like,
what the fuck is Tomalak doing here?
As soon as he said Tomalak, I was like, wait a minute. Because we've actually seen him at least twice, maybe three times, if he was one of the Romulans in that ship in the end of season one. When they were like, we're back. Cause I don't know if
except
they had names.
Not back. No, yeah, they didn't. And then it was like Romulan one, Romulan two.
Yeah, exactly. and then they didn't come back for like another season.
And it's too bad too, because Romulans are such great foils for the Federation. They're diametrically opposed to kind of everything that the Federation stands for, but they're just as smart. They're just as logical. They're just as cold and calculating. They have equal firepower.
They're way more ruthless. Ships.
Yeah. They're very ruthless, and they're not driven by like greed. Like the Ferengi are just, their whole thing is just greed, which makes them like stupid and comical and like pretty kind of vaguely racist. But the Romulans are just like, this is how business is done. They have the logical side from Vulcan, but the ruthlessness of like the Borg. They're such, I think they really are like the scariest bad guys for me are the Borg, but the most interesting to watch are the Romulans. I love Romulan episodes.
It's a really well-placed villain. And I wonder about the decision to continue to use Tomalak in this episode. It makes all the sense in the world because we're bringing back people from Riker's past.
Yes.
But in general, this is our third time seeing Tomalak. And I don't know if that's really necessary because for the Ferengi, every time we see them, it's a different Ferengi.
Yes.
And I feel like we could have done that for the Romulans too. I don't know if we needed guy.
We've seen Damon Bach a few times, but really everybody
didn't we only see him once? When did we see Damon Bach again?
Oh God. See, this is how forgettable the Ferengi are. I'm like, okay.
Yeah, we've only seen him once. We've seen other Damons, but so I feel like we could have mixed it up with the Romulans a bit, but for this episode, it actually makes all the sense in the world. So we see Tomalak and we're like, Tomalak again. Okay. And you just see again, this look on Riker's face where he's like, this is going to take some getting used to. And it turns out that Tomalak still wants to know the location of Outpost 23. And this is the final piece of the negotiation, is to let them know the location. And why would that be the final piece of a negotiation? Yeah. I don't know.
And it's the one thing that the Federation won't give them. So I feel like that would be the first piece you talk about. And then you go, yeah, we're not going to give you that. And then they're like, all right, well, then there's no negotiation. It's like, all right, well, hi. Like, how is that the final piece? Yeah, I don't get it.
Riker pulls Troy and Picard into the ready room to chat about why they shouldn't give away. Tomalak.
Yeah.
Yeah. To chat about why they shouldn't give away this super secret information to Tomalak, to which Troy and Picard respond, that was a long time ago. A lot of water under that bridge. We're all friends now. Just give it up.
Also, Station 23 is no longer the like holdout technological station that it was 16 years ago. Yeah. It's just kind of like a whatever now. So yeah.
Right. Which they don't need Riker to share that information in that case. So the whole thing about he's the best man for the job still is not adding up.
Nope. Sorry, Picard.
What I wanted to point out was in the ready room. I don't know if you noticed there were some subtle changes in there.
Did you see the like model of the ship? It must have been another ship that Riker had served aboard or something.
No,
before.
I didn't see that.
That was right on the desk. What other changes did you see?
So I noticed the super dope space painting behind Troy and Picard.
Oh, God.
Another painting of space, but it was really cool. And behind Riker, there was a geode.
I saw that. And I've always been a geode nerd. And yeah. Geodes and like jewelry and stuff have just made this like huge like return, which I'm like, okay, cool. Like that's cool that they were like trendy, but I've been in love with geodes since I was a little kid, so much so that a neighbor across the street gave me this like big purple geode, not as big as the one that Riker has behind him. That thing must be worth like 20 grand, but I had one that was like as big as my hand. It was a pretty good size one. And I was like, oh my God. And it was a cutaway, just like you want to see a geode. So when you turn it around, it just looks like a rock.
Yeah.
So I thought that all rocks look like that on the inside. So I remember on like road trips and stuff, I'd just be putting rocks in my pocket like crazy. And my parents were like, what the fuck are you doing? And I would get home and smash them open and be like, it's just a rock inside. Like, what is it? Like, I was
How
so
did you smash the rocks open?
With a hammer. Yeah. Wow. My dad was like, here's a hammer. My dad was very like, you have an engineering kind of mind, like you're taking things apart all the time. Like, go for it. Just, you know how to be safe with a hammer as by seven. Like, just don't get your thumb in the way. You're fine. Like,
this is imagine.
Put these glasses on. Go ahead.
Put yourself in your parents' shoes, where you've got this 7-year-old daughter who's got pockets full of rocks and comes home and is like, "Daddy, can I have a hammer? Because I really need to break these." And you're just like, "Sure, sweetie. Go have fun.
Put your safety glasses on and keep your hands free. You're fine. Like, you know what to do." Yeah. And like, I would smash rocks open.
Why is my kid smashing rocks in the garage? Like. But you know what? Could be worse. So, hey.
But you know what? I ended up actually coming full. So I felt super fucking ripped off like my whole life. I actually came back around full circle last year when we were back to teaching in person. And I was teaching my elementary school kids basic geology stuff. And we were learning about different types of rocks. And on Amazon, you can buy geode kits where it's just like a bunch of little like lab made geodes that are all kind of like the size of like a quarter or a half dollar, but like really no bigger than that. And it came with like 25 of them. So I brought in a couple of hammers and I had everybody put on little glasses and they could just smash it. You know, and these are like 7-year-old, 6-year-old. So they're kind of tapping, tapping, tapping. And luckily most of them were really thin. So just a little tap and they'd break open. And these kids, it was like all around me. Kids were like, whoa, cool. And I was like, see, that's what I should have been experiencing. And they all got to take home their geodes and they fucking loved it. We did it right before pickup. So as the kids are getting picked up, the kids are like, mommy, daddy, look at these rocks. Oh my God. Like, so cool. Oh, so
that's
awesome.
That's perfect. See, this is the beautiful thing about teaching. You get to give students the childhoods you wish you had.
Yeah.
This is wonderful.
Yeah.
Anyway, also, you don't have to keep them, which is also wonderful. You can yeah. I'm like, right, what am I going to back home?
Yeah. What am I going to do with 25 little mini geo? They're too big to be earrings, too big to be a necklace, but too small to display.
Anyway, I was talking about the children, not the geodes.
Oh,
but yes, that too.
Even better. Yeah. Mom and dad are here. Bye.
Exactly. Speaking of which, Riker's now a parent and gets a call from Beverly.
Look at this. This is why you're so good at this. Cause we brought it right back full circle.
Right. Right. And now he's coming to sick bay because his son is hurt. And you're like, this is totally new because Jean-Luc has experienced having a dad for like 15 years, but Riker has experienced being a parent for like 15 seconds. So now it's like, what do I do when this happens?
Yeah,
and you got to imagine a 15-year-old boy. It's not his first broken anything, sprained anything.
Nope, not
but
at all.
For Riker, this is his first day as a parent in his entire memory.
Yes.
So he gets this call, like, come down to sick bay. Jean-Luc's been hurt. And he's like, oh, crap. You know, and he runs down. What has gone on? What's going on with his son? Comes to find out that he sprained his wrist or something like that, playing
Parisi Squares. Yeah. Which, by the way, we saw the return of the kick-ass Parisi Square, like, uniform from like season one.
Yeah, I was
trying to remember. Tasha and Worf and two other people in the background were going off onto some station. I think that was 11001001 because they were going off to play Parisi Squares. They invited Riker and he's like, no, thanks. I'm going to go fuck around with Minuet on the, on the holodeck. So this is actually perfect that we have like a Minuet callback and a Parisi Squares callback in the same episode episode.
Yeah. That is perfect. Cause I was actually thinking, I was like, is this our first time seeing Parisi Squares or not? I didn't remember, but yeah, this is a perfect callback to that episode for reasons we're going to get into in a second. But, when he comes down and Beverly's like, oh, calm down. Well, it's not a big deal. I was kind of like, well, then what'd you call him out of his super important meeting for then? Mm-hmm. This is not a big deal. Why did you call him? Get down.
Also, he broke his wrist and you healed it in like 5 seconds. Like, that's more just like to come over to him at the end of the day to be like, hey, by the way, Jean-Luc broke his wrist. I fixed it. You can talk with him about that later. Have a good rest of your evening.
This is like literally what we do with our students all the time. If our kids get hurt, I mean, not if they break something or, you know, sprain something, but if they have some kind of incident where you're like, ooh, they're going to tell mom and dad about this when they get home.
You know what?
Email right away.
This is one of those times where I want a shirt that says on it, this could have been an email. This could have been an email, Bev.
You could have just said that in the calm, like, hey, Riker, I know you're, you know, you might be in a meeting or whatever. Just want to let you know, Jean-Luc broke his wrist playing Parisi squares. I said it. He's fine.
Yeah.
He's going to be in his room. Like, easy. But to be like, get down here immediately. You're like, oh no. And then you come down. He's like, ah, he's already healed. That was really unnecessary. To me,
it did give us the opportunity, though, to get to see Riker as a parent, because
it was so great.
Yeah, because it was like, I was so worried about you. Do you know what time it is? I've been calling everyone kind of thing. Right. Mm-hmm. And then Beverly pulls him aside because she's one of the few other parents aboard the ship who we see regularly.
Yeah.
And she's like, you know, how many times, what age did you start playing Parisi squares? How many broken wrists and ankles and everything do you have? Like, this is, you know, this is a moment to bond with him. So
and
I love
being
that Riker,
way too hard on him for no reason. And he's like, well, it's my first day. I don't know.
Yeah. Like there's no manual. And he's like, Dr. Spock has this manual for how to raise kids. So anyway, it is a way to see him as a parent. And he does kind of soften his stance a little bit. And then we see them in their quarters and they're kind of talking
before
about
they get
family.
To the quarters. We actually have them. There's a few moments just like right before that, that I think were really sweet. There's a moment in sick bay where Jean-Luc is like, oh, I'm so sorry to call you down here, dad. I know you're doing important stuff. And Riker's just like, there's nothing more important than spending time with my son, which I thought was really sweet.
Yeah.
And then in the turbo lift, they're kind of just having a chat. And it's just like this really wonderful heart to heart where Riker tells him, you know what? My dad wasn't there for me when I was a kid and I really needed him to be.
Oh, you're right. You're right.
So, and that's, you know, I don't want to be that kind of dad who's just an absentee father. So I'm going to do better, you know, just bear with me because I'm new at this, but I'm going to do better. And all of that just gave me all the feels. I was just like, this is wonderful. And again, Riker's relationship with his dad is really stupid. Like what we find out in season one, I think.
No, where, season two, because Pulaski.
Oh, right. Yep. You're right. Season two, because of Pulaski. So we find out that his mom died when he was like 2. And so he's raised by his dad. But for some reason, him and his dad just always had beef and never got along. And he wishes his dad died instead of his mom and all this stuff. It doesn't really track why the relationship is as bumpy and rough as it is, but it is. So they have like no relationship.
None.
So for him to not want to repeat that with his son is really beautiful. And it's just like this really sweetheart heart moment. And then they go back to their quarters. And now we're back up at their quarters where he starts watching home videos. Riker's watching home videos, which I guess they still make in the 24th century.
Okay. See, this was something I loved. I loved this. Riker looks up family videos to try to jog his memory and he tells the computer limit to visual. So it really looks like we're watching like 1970s and 1980s home videos where like very 1960s and 70s, like there was no sound. So it was just everything on silent, which yes, home videos were still a thing, are still a thing, which I think is adorable because nobody really, I guess we do. We just don't film them on camcorders. We do everything on our phones now, but we finally see his wife, Min, and it's Minuet. Uh-oh.
Bum, bum, bum.
100% bum, bum, bum. Thank you, Cherise. Because now it's like, what the fuck is going on? Mm-hmm. We've had like a couple of things that are understandable and totally track. Like the computer's been laggy all day, whatever. But
never
now,
happened before, but
never happened
totally
before,
reasonable
but,
that
all
it
right.
could happen.
Right? Now we are making peace with the Romulans. They want to know this. They want to know the location of Station 23. Now we know that Min is Minuet. Like, this is messed up. And you know what? It never occurred to me that when Troy had said like Min was a lovely woman, she was this and that. I just thought that was her name. And then when I saw that it was Minuet, I was like, oh, what a great way to cloak. Like, you said her name in a way that we buy it, but then to find out it's actually Minuet. It's like, oh my God.
I thought that was so clever because I remembered in this episode, and I mentioned this when we were reviewing 1001, whatever the heck, that whole episode. When we reviewed that, I mentioned Minuet comes up again in an episode I love. And this is the episode. This is the only other time that we see Minuet. And when she's, and I was thinking, how do they get around the fact that it's Minuet? Like, how do they reveal that? I couldn't remember.
Yeah.
And so when Troy mentions it and says, oh yes, Min was a lovely woman, I was like, ah, that was so clever. Cause Min is totally sounds like a complete name. There was nothing in my mind that said this was a nickname at all. Yep. Why would that even be a thing?
Not even.
And then when you see her and you just see Riker's face, and actually, if I was watching this episode for the first time, I would not have even recognized Minuet. Because she doesn't look like Minuet. She's not wearing the saucy dress. She's just like some random lady.
Her hair is cut differently. It's cut more with like something you would expect from like a captain's wife kind of haircut. It's not anything crazy. It's definitely not anything like
a little more soccer mom, less like saucy woman in a jazz bar.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Little less like holodeck vixen, little more just soccer mom. Totally. Yeah, and so he knows something is up. He is pissed.
So he's wait a minute. Minuet was the love of my life, but also a holodeck character. So how can I have a son with her? Come on.
Yes. So no. So this is where we really get into the heart of the action, where he goes up to the bridge and he gets into it with Geordi. He gets into it with Worf, with Data, and none of them can answer basic questions. None of it. Right. And they're all coming up with some excuses. Like Geordi's been working this level one diagnostic for 30 hours. It wouldn't take more than 4. Worf can explain where he got that giant scar. Data can't calculate fast enough how long it would take to station whatever
at warp 7, warp 9.
Yeah, not at all. So something's up. And Picard tries to intervene. And I love that Riker's like, shut up. And I was like, oh, now you know what it feels like to say shut up to somebody.
Literally Picard. What I wrote in my notes. I was like, now you see how Wesley felt. How you like it. How you like it. Where you're sitting on the bridge in front of everybody and someone just yells at you, shut up. And then Riker took it another step, because before when Picard told Wesley to shut up, it was just like, shut up, Wesley, done, because Wesley's a kid.
Yeah.
But in this case, Picard was like, excuse me. And Riker was like, I mean, close your mouth and stop talking. Like, did all the extra.
Yes.
I was like, oh my gosh.
I wish that Wesley had been in this episode.
Just to have some satisfied.
Yeah, he wasn't in this episode. And it makes sense because him 18 years later would have been too drastic. So that wouldn't
also work. He's not going to be on the Enterprise in 16 years.
No. He wouldn't be
on some other ship doing some other missions.
Yeah, that would absolutely make sense. So Riker's like, I'm done playing this charade. Now, background trivia. Riker says, I'm done playing this charade, which is the British pronunciation of the word that we say charade. So he said charade, and then they made him go back and dub it over and say, I'm done playing this charade. So he had to go back and redub that because he said charade, and that would have sounded weird. Tomalak comes in and he's like, very well. And everything disappears. So everybody freezes except for Tomalak. And you're like, oh shit, the Romulans have Riker in some sort of station. Because remember, Alpha Onias 3 was a little too close to some Romulan shit. You know, that's why they had gone down there in the first place, to be like possible Romulan stuff. And the Romulan Tomalak is like, you beamed down a little too close. So it was pretty easy to just flood that cave with gas, because we already had it piped into that random cave for some fucking reason.
Yeah.
So we just gassed you, and the other two were able to get beamed away, but we got you. And they have strapped neurotransmitters to him and popped him onto like their version of the holodeck to get information,
which is actually kind of cool when you think about this type of technology. If you could just like pop some neurotransmitters onto my head, or you know, something non-invasive like that,
to access your memory and build from there,
like how powerful could that be in like post-traumatic stress reduction?
Yes,
like that could be so powerful. Or in, you know, any kind of like trauma resolution, that could be really powerful for therapy, just in general, to go back and repress memories. Or like,
can you imagine? I mean, I can think of a number of reasons why I would want to go back to review, almost like review footage of like that incident, to clear up misunderstandings, to clear whatever, right? Like that would be so helpful.
And I think it could be really powerful for the future, because one technique that is really common amongst high level professionals and athletes and things like that is visualizing things, like visualizing a chess match or an Olympic run or whatever, visualizing it in excruciating detail over and over and over and over.
Yes.
Because your brain tracks that practice just as if it was real.
Yes.
And this could be so helpful for people to visualize, to actually experience your track meet or to experience something that's coming in the future to give your brain lots of practice.
Yeah.
And also to give you confidence in areas where you might not have confidence. I just see so many applications for this technology. Yes.
Yeah.
Let's get this going, people.
Yeah.
If you absolutely are an inventor, go ahead and invent this. I will totally use it. I can't say I'll buy it because it's probably gonna be expensive.
Yeah. And I make teacher salary. So that's right. Not gonna happen.
But when it comes down to peasant prices, I will definitely get my hands on it and use it because that's just cool technology. So anyways,
peasant prices. That's something we need.
Right. So anyways, point is. Is,
yeah.
You find out.
Yeah. When it's proletariat prices, we can start purchasing shit like this. Okay.
When it's plebe prices, just like as low as it could get. If I could trade a cow for it, then we're
gonna,
I'm just kidding.
You're going to trade a whole cow for that? Do you know what you can get out of a cow? Yeah, okay. Anyway. All right. Yeah. Never do that. Maybe a couple of chickens.
Yeah. The wheels are coming off at this point. So
yeah, no.
So we find this out and Tomalak's just like, you know, aha, you've seen through my clever plans and all of this. And then he's like, but how did you see through it? We had like created the perfect replica of things in your brain. How did you figure out that this was all fake? There's just no way. Mm-hmm. It wasn't enough just because we were asking about the location of the starbase. That was not enough to tip you off. And he was like, it was because of Minuet. It's like, what do you mean? That memory was strong and powerful. You definitely loved her. That's why we picked her. And he was like, she was a holodeck character.
Yeah.
And they're like, that's impossible. And it's like, no, it was a holodeck character. So, you know, I knew all this was fake. So they're like, well.
And it was a holodeck character that was enhanced by the Binars
right,
to be hyper-realistic. It wasn't your typical run of the mill sort of holodeck program, which is why he said she was a very special program.
Right. So, because the Binars created her. So when the Binars left the ship, Minuet left as well. So yes. It wasn't even like a holodeck program he could access regularly. Like she was just gone.
Yes, absolutely. Now they take Riker to meet another prisoner they have. And it's actually the boy, Jean-Luc. And his name is actually Ethan. The Romulans kidnapped him and his family. He's like, he escaped once and managed to kind of stay hidden for a few weeks, but they found him again when he like came out searching for food.
And they apparently just used him as a construct, as a template.
Yeah.
For the son that Riker had
to create
in
trust.
That fantasy, which
why
would they do that? They could make fake characters, but that's that was their explanation. We use this kid.
I mean, like it worked. And so, you know, Riker gets Ethan to talk to him because at first he's very, very skittish, but he sort of tells him this whole story about why he's there. And now the Romulans come back in to be like, have you guys had enough time to talk? Which is also a question. Like, why would you just have him like chatting? But whatever, who cares?
Yeah.
They come in and Ethan and Riker attack these Romulans, steal their disruptor. And Riker's like, it's time for you to show me.
Which is pretty hardcore for Ethan, I have to say.
Hell yeah. Because Riker like palmed this dude in the nose and like broke his nose. And the camera pans over and like 10-year-old Ethan is taking on a Romulan as well. It's like, Jesus Christ, right? Of course, he just kind of manages to push him around and then Riker comes and finishes him. But whatever. I was like, damn, dude. Because as a 10-year-old, I'd have been like, I'm going to hide in the corner and wait for all this to be over. Mm-hmm. But they end up running off and Ethan shows him like this escape vent that he had kind of found his way through. And Ethan, in his last attempt, has mapped out the entire station. He's got answers for everything. Riker's like, how many guards are there in the shuttlecrafts? How many? And this kid is a suspicious AF. He knows all the inner workings of this Romulan base.
Mm-hmm.
And Riker asks some question. I don't remember, but the answer that Ethan gave was like, only Ambassador Tomalak.
Yeah. The question was, so Ethan was telling him all these different things and Riker's like, can we get off? Can we get a shuttle? Can we get away? And he's like, no, we can't because the guards, whatever, but there is a communication station. So Riker's like, maybe we can send a message to the Enterprise and they can come and rescue us. And then Ethan says the only way to access the communication station is through Ambassador Tomalak's voice command.
Bam.
So we need his exact voice.
There it is.
And Riker's like, what did you just call him? Did you just call him Ambassador Tomalak? He's like, yeah. He's like, wait a minute. He was only ambassador in the fantasy world in the holodeck. How would you even know about that since you weren't supposedly in that world or in the holodeck?
Yeah.
And he's like, and then all of a sudden you hear the Romulans banging at the door and he's like, they found us. We've got to run, Riker. And
Riker's like, I thought you said they couldn't find you because they weren't able to
shield us.
Yeah. Because something in the rock shields them from being discovered
from tricorders.
So now we know after, you know, and a of course, because it's pandemic and all we do is binge watch. And I binge watched WandaVision. In my notes, I wrote, it was Ethan all along. So it's like, it was Ethan the whole time. The Romulans disappear. The base disappears.
And that's right after Riker says, I'm not playing in it anymore. You got some splaining to do.
You've got some splaining to do, Ethan.
And I felt so bad for Ethan, the way Riker was just like, that's it. I'm not playing. I don't like this game. It was just like, I don't want to be your friend at all. And
Ethan's like, we're unfriended. Yeah.
And it's like, boom, and everything disappears. And we're back to
just,
the cave.
They're just in this cave. And Ethan finally comes clear. So there are three plot twists. One, we flash forward to the future. Plot twist one. Two, it was all a ruse and the Romulans actually have you. And three, it was Ethan all along. So it's like flip, 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 flop, right?
Which is so, what makes this episode so good.
It makes it so good and also very unsettling because you never know what's really real. So Ethan tells Riker his people were destroyed. His mother hid him on this planet to keep him safe because she knew that their enemies would hunt her down to the ends of the universe. So she had to leave him, which they did. And she programmed these scanners all over the cave to read his mind and give him anything that he would want, which also... fucking crazy technology. Mm-hmm. So, but he wanted someone real, which is why he kept Riker. So he allowed Geordi and Worf to get beamed away. And then Ethan changes his form and we see him how he really is as this like bug-eyed alien with these long fingers. And mm-hmm. I thought production must have been running out of money because that was some terrible monster makeup. It was just clearly like a mask or whatever, but who cares? Now, this is what, when I remembered what episode this was, my recollection was different. I remembered that Riker said, why don't you come with me? And the boy was like, no, I have to stay here and wait for my mom. And he just like left this kid alone on this planet. But in reality, Riker offers Ethan to like come to the Enterprise with him because it seems that, you know, it's been like many years and his mother hasn't come back. So it looks like they got her and they just beam up to the Enterprise. And that's the end of the episode. And I'm really, really glad that like, I remembered that incorrectly and that there's some version of a happy ending where like this, mm-hmm. he's a child who's clearly not a child anymore, like has been there for many years. Like that this,
but he's still probably a child in his species.
Could be.
Because he still probably is, especially based on his behavior and the fact that he fashioned himself as a kid and the fact that he just wants a friend to play with and all that
That's
stuff.
That's true. So we can assume he's a kid. We can assume
he's still a kid. Yeah.
I'm horribly sad existence. Oh,
it is because even getting, and this actually reminds me of that episode where that boy's mom dies on that planet. And then the aliens on that planet try to kidnap him and take him to the planet to give him everything he ever wanted and pretend to be his mom and all that stuff.
Yes. Yes.
To try to like give him a great life. And they make this whole case about that's not real. It's not real life. He can't stay isolated. He needs social contact, yada, yada, yada. Yeah. That's the same thing with this boy who Ethan's real name ends up being Barash. That's the same thing for Barash is that he had everything he needed as far as he can make social things and food mm-hmm. and whatever, but he still needs someone outside of his own brain.
Yes.
To interact with.
Yeah.
And this can't last forever. And one of the things that I thought was really interesting that he said, these scanners give me anything I want, just like it did for you. So Riker actually invented the whole thing. Ethan or Barash just wanted Riker to stay with him and wanted a friend. And so he inserted himself as Riker's son. But as far as everything else, that actually came from Riker's brain. He wanted to be on the Enterprise. He wanted to be the captain. He wanted a family. He wanted like all these things. And it was like, oh,
that's really interesting. Sweet. See, I never thought of it from that perspective. I just thought he kind of did the like telekinetic version or the telepathic version of like the neurotransmitters. Where it's like, I just took things from your mind and like constructed a reality. But that is really sweet.
Yeah. I think it was the scanners that took things from his mind and constructed a reality. And
that's really sad like, and sweet. Yeah. I'm just playing in like your fantasy. So what kind of bums me out about this is that we don't have any update on like where Barash is or what happened, but I would really like to think that like he made himself a little family somewhere and, or like his mother actually wasn't killed and they were reunited, you know, cause she was like held hostage somewhere, something. And he got her free or whatever. Anyway, it's a very sweet episode when you get down to like the end of it. And I really loved it. It was a fun episode. It's not the most memorable, obviously, because we couldn't remember which one this was, but the plot twists and the shifting realities always kind of freaks me out a little bit because I feel like we're living in the Matrix and you just never know what's super real.
you know, it's so interesting that that freaks you out. That's not your first time saying that. And it never freaks me out. I find it endlessly fascinating, probably because I just assume whatever reality I'm living in is real. Like I never assume I'm in the Matrix. I'm just like, whatever, this is real. Even if it's a really vivid dream, I'm like, okay, whatever. It's a really vivid dream because whatever I'm experiencing, it's like, this is where you are. So even in his, you know, fake reality of being 16 years in the future, there's still trade negotiations. There's still stuff to do. Right. So it's kind of like,
I mean, I wonder if that speaks to like a control thing where it's like, I need to know that what I'm experiencing is real. I don't know. I don't really know what that is.
I don't know either. And I feel like your response makes a lot of logical sense to me. And I just wonder why I don't have that at all. I should be worried about reality not being real.
Well, you know,
like
what?
The same thing with the Matrix. I had the Matrix, whatever.
I had the same response when I watched A Beautiful Mind, which I don't know if you've seen it, but it's
I have not actually.
It came out like 20 years ago or whatever. Yeah. So I'm going to spoil it. But really, the man has been like inventing these people all along. And it was only at the very end where we realized that none of these people in his that he's been interacting with were real. And he was just having massive schizophrenic breaks. And his like friend from college kept coming back. And now he works for the CIA and he's helping, like he needs this man's like Russell Crowe's help. Cause he's like a brilliant mathematician or whatever to like crack these codes or whatever. And his wife finally learns like years later that it's like, he never had a roommate in college. He had like his own dorm to himself, like all this. So everybody thought like, oh yeah, no, I'm meeting with my friend from college tonight. Like maybe you can meet him some other time, whatever. And none of it was real. Wow. Like none of these people were real. The CIA mission wasn't real. He was just having the schizophrenic break and like having meltdowns like in his shed looking for clues that didn't exist. So that to me, like, I remember that was the first time I saw something like that where it wasn't real. And I was like, oh God, that's fucking terrifying. That is terrifying. So I think this episode doesn't freak me out as much. Like the one where Riker is in that like mental hospital, that I think is like more scary.
That one's definitely freaky because there's a feeling of being trapped in that episode over and over and over and over again.
Yep.
This episode doesn't feel trapped. This episode feels like tricked.
Yes. Right? It really does.
Completely different.
And we learn at the end, none of it was malicious. It was just born out of this boy's loneliness.
Sad. And he didn't get hurt. No one got hurt.
Yeah.
And no one was supposed to get hurt.
And
at the end, Barash leaves the planet and goes and makes friends and, you know, has a social life and moves on with his life. And it's actually a really beautiful ending.
Yeah, it really is.
A really sweet episode.
Yeah, it really, really is. Well, guys, that's it for us for this episode. Next week, we're talking season 4, episode 9, Final Mission. Thank you so much for geeking out with us. And we'll see you guys next week.
Bye. Thanks for geeking out with us. Be sure to join the crew at thetngpodcast.com to be the first to know when we do our live shows or host events exclusively for our members. We'll see you next time.